We're back in on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah in the Mobile Kintec studio. We're here at the Clayton Public House in Surrey, site where you can watch all the Seahawks games. Great stop for your NFL games on Sunday tonight, the big Thursday nighter with the Seahawks and Niners, which is why we're on a little bit early today, and at 5 we'll send you off for the Thursday nighter in this big NFC West divisional matchup. But let's get back in on your Vancouver Canucks. Our next guest, Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst, joining us here every Thursday on Canucks Central. What's happening, Landon?
Oh, not much, guys. How about you?
We're trying not to overreact to game one of the season, but still reacting at the same time because
how's that going for you?
It is our jobs, but also like game one, and you've seen it all week, and we'll see it for a lot of October. Like the play in the first month of the season just isn't quite as crisp, as sharp as we're used to seeing it when you think about the last big hockey games we watched in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, and I think the toughest part is when the games are, you know, playoff time, but, you know, November and really past December is when a team doesn't have their A game, they still have a full understanding of their system, and it doesn't generally look or happen like it did last night. But at the beginning of the year, when you lose your game and you're trying to figure things out, like, it's just too much of a mountain to climb all at once.
Yeah, and there were a lot there. I mean, on the post game show, there's a lot of concern about goaltending. You know, Pettersson took a lot of bullets, but in terms of evaluating individual players in the first game of the season, like, how much stock do you take out of each individual in one single game to begin the year?
I mean, you take a little bit for sure, but, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not even just the first game of the year. It's just one game of the year, right? Like, you're going to have tougher nights, but in saying that, you want to be able to see that your guys are, at least if they make a mistake, it's making it trying to do the right thing or with effort. Like, they were trying to do what they're supposed to. If you can see that, then at least you're trending the right way. It's when things kind of derail and you don't know what you're looking at is when it's actually a big issue. And I don't think that was the case last night. To me, it looked like a team that had, you know, basically a quarter of the rosters new, and they didn't spend a ton of time going through all that stuff in camp, like Talk said in his post game last night. So it kind of looked like a new team playing their first real game together.
Yeah, and part of it is like the simple explanation, I guess, and every player essentially addressed it after the game. But, you know, they got up to the early lead, and it kind of went into cruise control, landing in periods two and three before Calgary really starts making that push. And Calgary, I guess, you know, they had their work boots on. They want to, like, prove to people that they're not just going to be a pushover this year. And lo and behold, you know, you can't just take any nights off in the NHL, as Rick Tocchet said.
And I think that's part of the point I was making before. In if it's later in the year and you get a 4-1 lead, not that you sit back, but you do just feel more comfortable that you kind of just sit into your system and you know that game's pretty much locked down, especially the way that they defended last year. But at the beginning of the year, when you sit back like that and you give the other team an opening, like, momentum builds quick because you're not used to being in a game like this again that matters. So as those goals start going in, it puts a little bit of panic into you of, like, you know, we're just having the time of our life, our fans are loud and everything's going great, and it flipped quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, when we're looking and trying to evaluate perhaps how some of these new guys are going to look playing together, Jake DeBrusk has a plant chance to play with Pettersson. And to be honest, I was really taken aback at the reaction a lot of fans had on Pettersson's game. Like, he wasn't great by any means, but I didn't think there were any red flags really in how he played last night. There were some good moments, I thought, with him and Jake DeBrusk, but obviously he can be a lot better than what he was. But what did you kind of see with that connection between DeBrusk and Pettersson last night?
You can see it's building a bit. It's a bit, I would say, it's in the stage of trying to show the other person that you want it to work. Like, you're almost going above and beyond to make plays. You know, like Pettersson's shot that he passed up with, you know, just under 7 minutes left in the second. Like, you need your guy to be selfish in that situation. You're at the hash mark. Like, you don't need to make another pass while he's completely guarded. But at the same time, he's trying to force that chemistry right away. Like, I understand what he's doing and I can appreciate it, but at the same time, you know, DeBrusk is going to be okay if he doesn't get that puck and it goes in the net, right? Like, you're trying so hard to make sure the other guy knows he cares, but I don't think any of us are talking about Petey after that game last night if he didn't finish the way that he did. Like, it was a totally kind of not good, not bad game for him, really.
Yeah, and it, the reaction, which Sat felt more on the post-game show last night, it just feels like the fan base, not that it matters a ton, but the fan base has lost confidence in Pettersson a little bit after the way last season ended.
Yeah, but I think a part of that, not part of it, I think a huge part of that is the fact that us guys have talked about it all summer long and kept it kind of front of mind of how is he going to respond? How is he going to respond? If they win that game 6-5 in overtime, it's not even as bad as what's coming in right now, right? Like, it's just, it's all everyone's kind of thought about all summer and how big of a important part of this team that he needs to be. Like, he needs to be better than he was last night, but it's not this crazy cause or cause for alarm right now, I don't think.
I mean, that's where I'm at on it as well. I wanted to ask you too about another new Canuck, Daniel Sprong, who we've also talked a lot about in terms of his overall game. Can he earn the trust of the head coach? And it's only one game in, but clearly hadn't earned the trust of the head coach. Did not play a lot in the third, had just over 10 minutes of ice time. Went, I think, about 11 minutes in the third without getting out there. There's a couple of pucks he didn't stop on, looked a bit confused in a defensive end. Like, we saw the things that have prevented him from playing up the lineup a bit more. It's only one game in, but I think it also shows, like, there is a lot of work that needs to be done here for him to get to a level where the coach can trust him.
I'd agree. I would also say, if that collapse doesn't happen, the rest of the team around him, you know, not taking the blame, like, not blame, but taking him out of, you know, he needs to be able to do a bit more defensively to help. But at the same time, you know, he did exactly what the player they signed does. He plays basically 11 minutes every night, and he can score, right? So, like, he did his job to start. Now, if everything else can clean up around it, you're not even really noticing that he's missing a shift here or there, and that's okay. Like, especially at his cap hit, like, as long as he's scoring, he's doing his job, really. Everything above that and what they can work with him to build him to is bonus, really.
Yeah, and it's going to be a season-long process, right? I mean, we saw with Hoglander last year, took him until basically the new year to really get enough trust to stick in top six moments. And even at the end of last year, he would still kind of go away in third periods when they were trying to hold a lead. Landon Ferraro, our guest here on Canuck Central. I wanted to ask about the defense. It was a tough night for Forbert and Desharnais. They're on there for a couple of goals against. They get stuck in their own end a little bit. Maybe could move the puck quicker, but Sat and I were discussing in the opening segment, you know, that's it's not entirely on them that they weren't moving the puck quickly out of their own end. It didn't feel like the Canucks were connected enough to be able to break out quickly at times last night.
I felt that last night there was, especially as the game went along, you know, kind of halfway through the first, especially at the second, as things really started to turn, as Calgary's momentum and speed picked up, it felt like the D on the Canuck side slowed down, trying to find a play instead of moving their feet and letting the play kind of come to them. But not only that, everyone was so stretched out that, like, it was kind of back to you're throwing it up and you're tipping it in. Like, that's your only option because everyone's lost their speed. Like, you need to be able to come back a little bit, at least one or two of you, that if it is just a dump and that at least you've come back and now you're coming up with speed, you have a chance to go get the puck again. But it was kind of like the preseason game we were talking about of, it was just a little bit behind everything on the forecheck because they couldn't generate any speed. But I think, especially with those two, in Desharnais and Forbert, like, they're not going to turn into crazy puck movers that can really push the pace. But what they can do is use their size, and where a smaller guy might need to take three steps to his left or right to clear a lane and find some space, they need to take a step because they're massive, right? So just getting a bit of movement as soon as you get that first puck touch in the D zone, especially, that you can build yourself a bit of space, and now there might be a play there that you can make with some pace. But if you're standing still, everything's moving fast around you, and you're trying to force a play out of something.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, that support kind of needs to be there. And it was interesting hearing the coach last night, and he kind of took the blame a little bit too, and he mentioned maybe it's on him emphasizing the rush so much throughout training camp and the preseason that they got away from doing the things they do well. How do you kind of juggle the or walk that line between trying to add to your game but also not losing your identity and kind of losing track of what made you a good team? I guess it's a really fine line to walk, and how delicate can that balance be?
Extremely delicate, I think, because you're talking about two very different sides of the game, right? Like, how much, you know, they're a very good defensive team last year, and you definitely want to keep that identity, but you do have some different players in the lineup now than you did last year, so that's going to change a little bit anyway, but you're trying to add more offense, so trying to get it through the player's head that, yes, I'm telling you that we need to get in the rush more and we need to generate more, but that doesn't come from taking chances. Like, there's a difference between seeing an opportunity and going for it and taking a really big chance because there might be something there. And the issue of when you're trying to add more offense is you get that little bit of green light, and as a player, your eyes go real big and you see a massive green light. Because you take, you know, you give an inch, you're going to take a mile, right? Like, everyone wants to have fun and play on the offensive side. So if I'm told that I can go, then I'm really going to go. But you need to be able to set that standard on the defensive side, really start dialing that in as soon as they can here. Because last night, like, they lost coverage a few times, especially when they got that third man high in the zone. Like, it was really hard for the Canucks to sort that out. So you need to make that base solid first, and then you can kind of get back to trying to push the envelope on the offensive side. Personally, that's how I would think about it.
How deep does it go? Like, a pre-scout on a goalie, how in-depth is that going to go each time out? Because, you know, I heard last night, like, the first thing on Calgary's pre-scout was Artur Shilov's and his difficulties tracking the puck through traffic from the point, and it was clear that that was a huge part of Calgary's game plan last night.
You look at those sheets, I feel like you, as you come into the league or you turn pro and you have more access to information before games, you look at them a little bit, but you're kind of like, oh, well, I just, you know, I'm going to look where I look and kind of deal with it on my own. And then you start to realize you need every little advantage to try and win games at the professional level, because the league is so close now that any piece of information, especially about the other goalie, like, you're studying that before you're watching games. You know, I don't know if you guys have watched the Amazon series yet, but, you know, Quinn's part in it. He's sitting in his apartment, he's got his two TVs set up, and he's talking about how he loves, like, guys are watching games all over the place and all the time. And they're looking at those trends too. As a D-man, you know, okay, this isn't a game where, you know, it's a bit more important for me if there's shots from length that are tougher. And as a forward, you're sitting there knowing, okay, I need to make sure that I get in front of the net and make it harder for him. So So they're definitely reading into all this, and they're studying it. That's people's jobs are literally to just provide pre-scouts. So the guys are taking the information. Now it's about what the coaching staff and specifically the goalie coach in Vancouver can help try and build this along and take it from something that, you know, is shown to be a bit of an issue here. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a strength, but it just needs to be kind of a net zero type thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. And one of the things, too, that was kind of palpable last night was as soon as Calgary scored a couple of goals in the second period, the amount of confidence they got. Like, do you get to a point where you kind of feel like you have a guy and you feel like you're going to get that extra goal you need? Did we just lose Landon?
I lost everything other than did we just lose Landon?
So I said, do you get it? Because what it seemed, it was palpable last night that Calgary, I mean, they got confidence after scoring that goal in the second. And once they got the second, it felt like they felt they were going to tie the game and take the lead. Like, do you get to a point where you feel like you have a guy and have a team?
Yeah, I think the other part of it for on the Flames side is, they're going into this year with really no expectations. So you're down in the first game. You just keep saying, hey, guys, just stick with it, just stick with it. Like, there's not as much pressure. And as you start mounting that comeback, you're having a ton of fun because you can see the stress on the other bench, right? That's a team that's in a completely different situation that made big strides the year before. They have cup aspirations as they move into the season. And you can see the stress that you're putting on the other team, and it just fuels your momentum even more. Like, it turns almost to a giggle. Like, you can see how much it's affecting the other team, and it just makes you have kind of this air of, it doesn't really matter what happens here. Like, we've already kind of succeeded, and now it's fun.
On JT, he had a, wow. I mean, a memorable 800th game, I'll put it that way. There was a little bit of everything. There was some good, there was some bad, there was a Gordie Howe hat trick. You know, I was thinking about it after, because obviously after the fight happens with Mantha and Calgary starts building the comeback, you know, does JT really have to go in for that fight? I mean, can't he just let Calgary chase him around all night? It's not like it was a dirty hit on Kevin Rooney, but just felt like he was goaded into it, knowing that they were just going to chase him around all night if he didn't.
Yeah, I don't think if this happens,
it's the code.
Later, you know, even a couple games into the season, basically if it's not the home opener, all the emotions in the game, I don't think JT fights there.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, I don't want to say it wasn't necessary, because he's setting a tone for his team and he's trying to do the right thing. I'm never going to fault a guy for that. But at the same time, things are going well. You don't really need to do it. And, you know, I played with Anthony Mantha as he was coming in Grand Rapids and a little in Detroit. And, you know, he's a skilled player that is very tough, and he's on a new team, and he's going to want to make sure that, you know, he's showing his guys that he's all in Calgary. So he didn't let it go, and I can understand where JT finally just kind of got frustrated and said, you know what, fine, let's go. And he handled himself well, but, you know, 2020 looking back, that did seem to provide quite a bit of momentum for Calgary.
Landon, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much for this.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
There is Landon Ferraro joining us here on Canuck Central. He joins us every single Thursday. And, you know, obviously that, like, everybody in Calgary is like, well, Mantha turned the game around with that shorthanded goal and that bite that he has. I mean, that's a great play from Mantha in his first game with our new team. And, you know, sometimes I think those things get overinflated.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, JT, does he have to fight there? I mean, it feels like it's a respect thing. He knows they're coming after him and why they're coming after him. Eventually, he's just didn't seem like he wanted to at first, but after a while, he was just like, I guess I'm going to have to do this.
They're chasing him around a lot too, right?
Yeah.
And knowing how JT wants to set his tone,
yeah.
Honestly, like, again, because it's the first game of the season, I don't worry about too much stuff in that sense, right? Should he have not fought, perhaps, I guess, looking back. But considering the moment, how the crowd reacted to it, I think the message it sends to his team and also what it says to players that play against JT, I think he kind of felt like he needed to do it. I don't know if, as much as that fight happened, is that the reason? There's so many things that happened last night that, like, yeah. I don't think there was one thing you just pinpoint and say, if this hadn't happened, the Canucks would have won the game or wouldn't have blown the lead.
I think the Canucks simply just got a little too comfortable and didn't help that their goaltender let in a couple of soft ones along the way as well. A couple of texts coming in. This one from Matt in Surrey. The problem with Petey and the reason why there seems to be a lack of confidence in him is because he's got a history of doing this. He'll play really well, gets lots of points, and then he has the stretch that he's in right now, which is two goals or whatever it is in his last 20 games. The problem is now he's making $11-plus million a year. There becomes less of an excuse for those kinds of slumps, and every game where he doesn't get a goal or an assist or play particularly well, the fans' perception is it's going to be the start of one of those slumps, and for $11 million, you can't afford to have that. Yeah, but he did have an assist last night.
Yeah, I mean, every player is going to have some slumps, though.
Yes.
Every player is going to have moments where they're not great. Yeah, I know people conflate what happened last year with now. It's a new campaign. Let's see where it's at. If we're 15, 20 games in and he's not playing well, then you'll have a lot to point to and say, here is the player being cold, but we're one game in. And if you want a player to play at $11.6 million every single game, you're not going to get that. Like, even McDavid's had bad games. Draisaitl's had bad games. You know what? They had one last night, actually. I'm not sure if anybody watched them, but those guys were not very good last night in their 6-0 loss. So there will be bad games, and I'm not even sure his game was all that bad. Like Landon said, it wasn't great. It wasn't necessarily bad. It was just kind of like a meh kind of game.
Yeah.
But it wasn't to the level that people made it out to be in terms of a no-show, quote-unquote. And that's kind of what I would push back against. But let's just see where things are at. 10-15 games in.
If the Canucks close that game out 4-2, nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
Not even in the slightest. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. It is Canuck Central coming up. Shane O'Brien, another former Canuck, joining us here on Canuck Central. That's next on Sportsnet 650.